Putting It Together is brought to you this week by the 6th Annual Champy Punship, the ultimate evening of wordplay. We will take 8 competitors, put them through 4 grueling rounds, and discover who is the pun-disputed champy pun of the word. There will also be music from our resident house band, the Pun-Loving Criminals. It's all happening at Oran Mór on the 16th of October at 7:30 p.m. Like camping, it will be intense.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Putting It Together. It's episode 101. Now, I've just woken up from a big long nap. The jet lag is a problem, but it's okay. I feel a bit weird. I don't know if you've ever experienced jet lag. But Australia to UK jet lag is quite strong. I've got a strange sort of acute awareness of everything I'm saying and doing at the moment, and then it dips into sort of the opposite, kind of a weird fog where you don't really know what you're doing. Anyway, I wasn't going to do the show tonight. I was going to do it tomorrow, but I've got a wee burst of energy now, and having just woken up from this long nap, even though it's late at night, I don't know, confused, but I'm back. And my guest this week is Christopher Howell, a friend of mine from many years ago. I haven't seen him in a long time, and he's worked extensively in the West End and on national tours, largely of big musical theatre productions. So it's amazing to hear about how that all works, about everything really, the audition process, understudying, resident directing work, stuff like that. I mean, just, yeah, and these long runs, which, as you probably have picked up, I'm quite fascinated with how things can run for a long time and people can do the job for a long time, you know. So we talk about all that stuff and sort of catch up as well, because he walked in the door and I hadn't really seen him for maybe 5 or 6 years, and we went straight to the recording, so in a way, this is us catching up as well. So that was great. That was a couple of weeks back. And in the meantime, excuse me. In the meantime, I've just been in Australia. I was in Thailand first, you might know. So I went to see the elephant sanctuary and I hung out with elephants. That's the most photos I've got from the whole trip. It's just elephants. I'm not a great one for taking photos, but when I saw these elephants, I couldn't resist. They were amazing. And I stayed in some really nice places in Thailand. I went north to Chiang Mai, which is a beautiful town. And that's where the sanctuary was. Loads of temples, and great people and amazing food. Quite relaxed, just didn't really do too much. And then I was in Australia, and that was kind of the opposite end of the scale. Intense work for Irish dance and music, and just long days and hanging out with amazing people, and I found it quite hard to leave. I found it quite emotional, and because it was a great week, and I enjoyed the music so much. And I don't know about you, but add the elements of jet lag, tiredness, long working hours, and great music together, and it's a recipe for me for emotion. I get emotional, especially when I'm tired, if I had, you know, a few hours sleep instead of a proper amount. So it was quite an emotional time, just because of those elements, really. And for that reason, I found it quite a big thing when I was leaving. And the journey home makes that tough, because you're kind of on your own for 24 hours on a plane, not really aware of the time or where you are. So, you know, it was challenging, but I did get a lot of sleep. I don't want to go into talking about flights, because I find it one of the most boring topics in the world to listen to. But that's about it. That's where I'm at. I'm back. I'm happy to be back. The bathroom in my wee house has been renovated, so that was lovely to come back to. And I also got a radiator put in the living room, which I never used to have. There's a fire in there, as many of you who've been here to be on the show will know. But never a radiator, and it was always kind of tricky. So it's there now, it's blasting away, fantastic. So I've no major complaints. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to be back doing the show. And thank you for all for tuning in and listening to episode 100. And of course, for the people who were there on the live event. But we go on now. It's 101. We carry on. And thanks for joining me and for downloading the show. If you haven't done so already, then please do hit the subscribe button on your podcast provider and give a review if you can on your provider. Other ways you can support the show are by going to Instagram and Twitter and looking for PitCC Pod. On Facebook, you can search Putting It Together. And you, of course, can go to the episodes, that's not the episode, you can go to the show's website, which is puttingittogethercast.com, and look for the yellow donate button. It's a PayPal button and it lets you chip in a wee bit. You can do that on a one-off basis, couple of quid. You can do it once a month. You can do whatever you want. Any amount is appreciated. So if you can afford to and you think the show is a worthwhile project, then please do have a wee think about contributing to it, because it would make a big difference. I'm trying to grow the show and to make it more viable for guests to do it. There's a lot of things, but yeah, I would really appreciate your help with that. So I won't keep you any longer. I'll bring you on now to the guest of the week. It's Christopher Howell. He's with me and we are Putting It Together.
You have to count to eight.
Just eight normally. Yeah,
5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, right.
I remember doing a thing with a woman who was choreographing some bit of it, and she had to teach it to us, and she said, so the basic thing with this is you count in groups of 10. And I was like, 10? I said, it seems unlikely. It's possible. Mm-hmm. It seems unlikely. She said, no, it's 10. It's really easy. And the music came on. And she went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2. As well, whatever works for you.
Brilliant.
So you're having a couple of weeks off.
I am having a couple of weeks off.
After quite a long run.
Yeah, but I think it's really making me appreciate the break I've had. The break I'm having at the moment
right now.
But it's been a really interesting year, actually. Starting off in London, then working in Paris, then directing in at university, and then of course working with Pet Shop Boys and Jonathan Harvey, which is kind of like, it's really hard when you're working with some people that are icons, and I guess Pet Shop Boys are icons. It's hard not to be a fangirl. So, hi, nice to see you.
And
then they give you a compliment. Thank you so much.
And you're working quite closely with them.
Yeah, very closely with them. And it's also, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. You know how they gauge it, because you know. I was singing a song that Neil, doesn't mean like it's my mate Neil, sung on an album.
Sure.
But giving it sort of rediscovering the song. That's what I was required to do.
Yeah.
And you wonder. You know, I think there's an element in all artists of competition, and you wonder what they really think. I mean, they were very nice about it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously the way I'd sing a song would be the way you'd sing a song to your next door neighbour would singing a song. But you just, I think the subject matter of this piece that they've written or rewritten. It's really dark. It's really, really, really intense. Mm. And the character I was playing went on a real journey, and it sort of ended, spiraled out of control, and had a breakdown, and took loads of drugs, and stayed up for 4 nights, and had sex with a prostitute, and it was
so a bit different from 40 Second Street.
Yeah. all to a club beat, which is nice. But It's kind of daunting taking that sort of work on, and it's even more daunting taking that work on with the writer in the room.
Right,
you
there.
Know?
Yeah.
It's when they're that close, because it was quite a small space we were working in. So it was good fun. But I'm quite pleased to be sort of like eschewing myself from that at the moment.
Yeah. And then you sort of take stock of it, don't you? And realise what life is about, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I do.
Yeah, well, I do as well. So it's like, just being able to come and see friends here as well. I love Glasgow so much. Mm-hmm. I love the vibe of this city. You know, there's not an area that I've seen in Glasgow that I don't like, actually. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm really proud to say that I stayed in the Red Road flats.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. There used to be a Salvation Army flat. They owned one of the flats there, and when I was working in the theatres, we stayed in these mad digs near the Botanical Gardens with this really eccentric landlady who had lots of mannequins everywhere, and she referred to them by names. And there was a white afroed, caftaned mannequin on the stairwell with a male mannequin behind him, and she was called Esmeralda, and that was Bobby.
Right.
And Esmeralda's hand was reaching out, and I remember we checked, got into the digs, checked in there, and one of us knocked Esmeralda's hand off, and this landlady went mad at us. This is a long story. And then we got to our rooms, and then we found like things like pubic hair in the bed and that sort of thing. So we thought, listen, we can't stay here. So we didn't do a moonlight flip. We paid there for the night and left, and we thought, what are we going to do? We're homeless. What should we do? And at the theatre in Glasgow, the Kings, they said, why don't you phone the Salvation Army? We went, really? Yes. Yeah. So the Salvation Army turned out they owned one of the Red Road flats.
Wow.
And so we got to stay on like the 15th floor, and it was really, really lovely and very scenic, but a bit scary when you went to Tesco's.
Yeah, inside is okay, but maybe the journey.
Once you got out of the sort of the compound, you know, it was a bit like, you know, it was amazing experience. But I mean, even that, I feel some sort of connection with Glasgow. I don't really, but I always have done, and I don't know what it is, but I do like being here. I feel very relaxed being here.
Yeah, yeah. And you've toured here a lot.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, quite a few times.
I mean, obviously
you've
come here to see Pals because you know a lot of people here. But you've been at the Kings like countless times, surely.
Quite a few times. Yeah, I've done the Kings and done Edinburgh as well. But I think even when I play Edinburgh, I always stay here.
Do you?
Yeah, I just find it's just a different atmosphere. I think it's, I know. They say my people, you know, although I don't sound the same as you, maybe inside I'm the same as you. I've worked here a lot as well, because I've done quite a lot of, as an educator, I've worked here a lot doing theatre projects in various schools and with various groups and things. So that's always been, it's just a different vibe to the vibe I'm used to in London.
Yeah.
And it's refreshing, and it gives me lots of life.
That's smashing. Mm. Well, you're getting it right now.
Yeah.
So where did it all start for you?
Where did it all start for me? I know that I'm a proper Londoner. So I was born in King's Cross.
Mm-hmm.
My parents worked for the London City Mission.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to live right behind King's Cross Station in this amazing old church called the Paget. I remember that. And my dad's and mother's ministry was to of the area. But then, so there's quite a poor, quite deprived area. It was depraved as well, because they also used to minister the prostitutes.
Sure, yeah.
And there's stories that my parents tell me quite often that I'd go missing. Because we had a small backyard, and then it was a side road in King's Cross. And but once or twice a week, one of the girls would bring me back in and say, Christopher's come out again. And the girls used to take their clients down the side road and have sex in cars, and apparently used to bang on the windows. So that might explain a lot about me to people that know me.
So you were to be found roaming around
with the prostitutes. Then they'd bring me that, and they were always very nice. I think my dad would give them a cup of tea,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. And but I think I think I always had that I think there's a great theatricality. So my dad was a missionary as opposed to a vicar. Although he has got a theology degree, he became a missionary. He was sort of Pentecostal. So I remember in my younger years, we went to school away to school for a while, because my mum and dad had this thing about they used to smuggle Bibles into Poland behind the Iron Curtain.
Right.
So you know, this big sort of romantic Indiana Jones, you know, of the Gideon's world, you know, smuggling Bibles in. But I think growing up in that environment, and I'm not knocking the faith, I guess I do have a faith because I've grown up with that. Mm. But definitely there's a real theatricality to religion and to religious practice. And I don't know if that's where it came from. So I used to do lots of things. I made quite a few appearances around, not as many as yourself, Brian, but quite a few appearances on theatre and a bit of filming when I was a kid.
Oh, right. Did you?
And that was good. And then, I really loved that. And I remember I got made, I got a very deputy head boy, and I was dressed as Edmund Hillary at school. I'll never forget. That's quite of a proud moment in my life. I did that, and then I kind of thought I wanted to get away from home when I was 18, and hadn't really got it together, but I just knew I wanted to get away from home, because I found the religious thing quite oppressive, but I'm not complaining about it, but I wanted to be away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and did a degree at Sussex University, and I did a degree in social science, and as I was going through that degree, I was just realizing I don't want to do this. I don't want to be a civil servant. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to understand how to manage an organization. I quite enjoyed the psychology elements of it all, and so as the degree went on, I thought I'm doing the wrong thing. And so very cleverly, I went to East Sussex County Council and I said, what research do you need doing? And they gave me a list of things they needed for my dissertation. Mm-hmm. And I struck a deal with them that, you know, it's like, listen, would you look favourably upon my grant application if I do this research for you? And that happened. And I went to drama school. And then I kind of like spent another 3 years studying as well. But it was brilliant, and then that's where it started.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my potted history there.
Wow! Yeah. So you were able to leverage what you had already
kind
done.
Kind of, but they wouldn't admit to that, would they? Of course not. But
but it worked out.
But yeah, so basically, it was really good. It was an amazing opportunity actually, because it was the 80s. They had this massive, you know, the rave culture, the drug scene really changed, really sort of re-emerged, didn't it? And you had acid and you had ecstasy with kind of like these sort of trendy drugs that you take in nightclubs and things. And so they'd done a new initiative, which was to see how preventative methods of teaching against drug taking. So I had to go in and assess the preventative methods through theatre and education.
Oh, okay.
So I wrote this sort of one-man show and took around all of these schools. And from that, I got an equity card as well. So it all worked really well for me, actually.
That was
a good period in my life. It was interesting.
And then you went off and did you study musical theatre?
Yeah. That's the pathway I chose. I went to Guildford School of Acting, but then I chose to go down the musical theatre path. Although my first job was a play, but it was,
Your first job was a play?
Yeah. What was it?
It was
a play with David Suchet.
Really?
About a musical performer called Sid Field. It was called What a Performance. Mm-hmm. And it was a great job. And we opened at Plymouth and we did a small tour and we came into the West End and everyone thought, yes, it's going to be great. This is it. This is the play of the season. This will be the big hit. And we closed 2 weeks later.
Two weeks?
Yeah. Oh, I've been in a lot of those. But it's like, but it was amazing. I mean, like, have you ever seen that film Harvey about the alcoholic that has the white rabbit? So he's the white rabbit. No. You've heard of that?
I've heard of it, yes.
It's James Stewart, I think.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Sid Field played the character on stage and the last scene was this character on stage and I was the white rabbit. And I was like, Christ, I've got to sit and hug Poirot. I've got to hug. Don't shake.
Yeah.
I became a fangirl again.
Yes.
He was really nice. He's a really, really nice man.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a great job.
So your first job took you into the West End, even though it closed after two weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, I mean, was that the beginning of just, it looks like, if from the outside, that was the beginning of a run of just West End.
Oh, yeah, listen. I think I've been really blessed and really lucky. And it's literally the right place, the right time. And also, I think, I've done quite a few shows that have closed early, which meant I've been able to do other things.
Right.
But I've got a lot of friends, obviously, who work in town, and they're really happy to stay and stay in the show for like, you know, I've got, and there's this guy, I know Phantom of the Opera has been there 33 years. It's like basically the same job.
Some people do that, don't they?
And I guess it's no different to having a career in banking, I guess.
Yeah.
But to do the same thing night after night, and I have to say I went back to see that show again recently and that guy still knocks it out the park, and he just can do that. For me personally, I think I get a little bit of itchy feet, so I think the longest I've ever stayed in an acting job has been just under 2 years,
which for us, particularly in Scotland, is a long time.
Yeah,
because we don't have that same culture here.
Well, I mean, this is I think you've got much more interesting and probably diverse theatre scene.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be more focused on new writing.
Yeah, exactly. And we have, I guess, with London being, you know, this hot tourist destination.
Yeah.
We do have a lot of, you know, of those long running commercial shows. It's quite nice. We're going back to, you know, the show we were talking about at the beginning, the Pet Shop Boys. That was a non-commercial venture, you know, and it's quite nice. It's quite nice to do that and to do something that's been relooked at and revised and has a finite time. You know, you go into some of those bigger shows, you know, that they're just gonna be there for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. There's nothing wrong with that, because there's two schools of thought, aren't there, about commercial theatre. And I think the commercial theatre does get criticised because it doesn't evolve. You know, these shows, these products,
they stay exactly the same because they work.
But that, you know, but then, you know, and people laugh at The Mousetrap, for example, and that's 60 odd years, isn't it? But, you know, it's still really busy every night, and it's still keeps, you know, 10 actors and, you know, the stage crew and the front of house staff and the bar staff in a job. And I think that's really important. I think it's very easy to be a snob and to be disdainful about those productions, but it's keeping people in work, isn't it? You know, and possibly that you know, from the audience, that might inspire an interest to go and see something else.
You know? Oh, definitely. Do you see that? I wonder what else is on, or I've seen other people in different things.
Yeah.
So what was the job that was almost 2 years, the longest one?
Well, I was in a musical called Wicked, which is about which is
most people listening will know.
I would have
thought, but yeah.
Yeah, that one.
You did that for nearly 2 years.
Yeah, nearly 2 years.
Dr. Dillamond, yeah?
Well, it was quite a funny thing, actually. I was booked as Dr. Dillamond, and then in both contracts, the guy playing the wizard, they normally employ sort of much older actors, like 70-year-old actors, because he's got to be sort of this sort of paternal figure, got really ill. And so I was there for nearly 2 years, but I spent nearly 7 months playing the wizard.
Oh, so you were first cover for the wizard?
Part of the job is you have to be the cover wizard, and it was wonderful. Got my picture outside the theatre as the wizard, and it's just an amazing show. And I was there quite early on, so I was there in the 5th and 6th year. I think they're in their 13th year now, so fairly early on. I went back for the 10th anniversary, and it felt strange. It felt like I was looking at, I don't know what, I felt I was like outside looking at something. It was quite weird. I think there's a disconnect. I think when you finish a job, I think, you know, I don't imagine you ever go back. So it was quite weird going back to it, and it was glorious to be invited, and it was lovely. There was a lovely party and yada yada. It is quite an incredible piece of storytelling. However saccharine and, you know, a popcorn it appears to be. It's quite sort of anthemic, you know, the music, you know, it was fun. But I really enjoyed that job. I just really enjoyed it. And I think for a middle-aged man like me, you know, being just music, I think musicals do keep you young. It probably there's an elixir of youth to it, definitely.
Sure.
I feel that, and it hasn't made me jaded either.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
When you went back for that 10th year, was the show exactly the same?
Yeah, they're just different people in the costumes.
But I mean, really exactly the same?
No, because I think in those long-running things, particularly with Wicked, there's a formula to the shows. You have to stand in a certain place, and they make sure you stand in a certain place every night because that's where the lighting is.
Yeah.
You see Wicked, you see some of these big shows without any lights on the set, and they look terrible. They're like, you know, like a sort of terrible school play, and then this incredible lighting happens, and it's magical, and you are transported to somewhere else. Yeah. But even within, you know, having to stand at a certain place to be hit by a light, while you have to tell the same story, how you tell the story is up to you. So, it is the same, yeah, but it isn't the same because people have different intonations in their speech. You know, people have different accents. It is the same, but it isn't. Music's the same.
Yeah.
But maybe the people singing are slightly different.
Of course. And then when they brought Wicked to London, they gave the two lead characters British accents.
Yes, they did. They did. Well, yeah, they did. Well,
are they allowed that or what?
They do. Yeah, they do. They do now. But Adina, she still played American, but Helen, who played it, Glinda originally was Australian, but had to play English.
Right.
But it kind of works. It kind of works. And the Americans, you don't know how the Americans always say this is our favorite production. They find it the most intense production.
Oh, do they?
Yeah,
cool.
But I think it's because of our accents. Yeah, everyone's very theatrical, aren't they?
Americans like the British accent.
they really
do. It gives gravitas that maybe isn't even there.
Possibly, they're your words, Brian.
I can be quoted.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? I wouldn't mind. I'd never say never to going back either. I loved it.
Right, is that something that does happen after years?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. Maybe, yeah.
Ever get things where there's a talk of coming back and you don't because you didn't have quite such an amazing time on another job?
I don't know. I haven't been in a position where I've considered returning to a job.
Right. Okay.
But you can never say never, can you?
People must do at some.
Yeah.
Stage.
Yeah. I mean, we had one of the original cast returned when I was in that show.
Oh.
You know, and some people come in and out of musicals all the time. You know, it's not so much. I think the plays as well, like some of those long running plays. I've got a friend that was in and out of being Joey the Horse in War Horse for quite a long time. You know,
And then what, away and doing other stuff?
Yeah, we'd go away and then, they need, someone's got to do Joey's tale. Okay, I'll go back in for a few weeks. No, so there is that.
And it's like a reliable person who's done that track. Knows the deal.
Yeah, I've not done that though.
Wow. What are some of those ones that closed early that you wish didn't?
I really still believe I did that the Perfume OFA musical for Andrew Lloyd Webber and Christopher Hampton, Don Black, and it was called Stephen Ward. And it was about, it looked at this crime, or mm-hmm. this the whole legal process. It was really interesting. So it looked at the Perfume affair. That was kind of like the nucleus of it, but it was more about the fallout of what happened to this man that was kind of like wrongly accused and sort of made a bit of a patsy, you know, a Jonah rather. And he was kind of like accused and ended up taking his own life, you know. Mm. And accused wrongly of all sorts of horrible crimes, and it had a real opinion, and it was directed by Richard Eyre, who's just he's a National Theatre of the 70s and the 80s. Mm. No, it's really strong political persuasions, and it was really nice to be. It was an interesting to be in a musical that was that sort of motivated mm-hmm. by a sense of justice, although it was a commercial musical. But it wasn't staged like it was, you know, there was no flying chandeliers or cars or, you know, we'd have in the Perfume of a musical that would be some, you know.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Anyway. But it was a privilege to be there from the very beginning. So I'd worked with Rich there on another show, and he asked two of us to come in and be the double act of these really corrupt policemen. Everyone had more than one part. It was because it was all sort of like an old National Theatre play where there's three principals and everyone else plays. It's a real company show.
Sure.
It was glorious. And so it was fabulous, fascinating to be in that process with, you know, Chris Hampton, Don Black, Angela Webber, thud, 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 names, you know. And they do mean, those names do have a relevance. And to be there at the beginning and then... Christopher Hampton says, is that sentence really hard to say? And you're like, you are, you know, one of our greatest living translators and playwrights.
Yeah.
And you're asking me that, you know. And Don Black saying, is that lyrical right? You know, you wrote Bond themes. What are you asking me? But it's
amazing.
It's humbling and it's amazing. But it's he, isn't it, really? And it must be quite difficult for any collaborator to work who works with Lloyd Webber.
Mm.
Or maybe even with Cameron as well, Cameron McIntosh, you know, when he does the new shows, because it becomes Cameron McIntosh's or Andrew Lloyd Webber's. Mm-hmm. And it does, in the, you know, like Lloyd Webber's collaborated with some great people like Jim Steinman, you know, Meatloaf writer, and Chris Hampton, Don Black, and yada yada. And there was just something in that work. That there was real germ of an idea there, and as with all work, you know, that someone said great musicals are rewritten. It might have been Sondheim, even, I don't know, but the gods said that, and there was something really, really intriguing and brilliant about it, and it ends up with this big courtroom drama, and the night we opened was the night the ceiling fell down at the Lyric on Shaftesbury Avenue, and it's a big thing, and it was just, all the attention got taken away from us. So, and he got really, really good reviews for this show, and it was really well performed. The cast were uniformly really good, and it just didn't grab attention. And so that show, I really wish had worked, and maybe it will come back. I know that there've been. I did one of them. There's been subsequent workshops, so they're rewriting it. So maybe that'll come. But I'm really sad about that one. That was a really long answer, wasn't it?
It's good. I mean, we've got time.
Okay.
But sometimes you're right. It's a thing about timing, isn't it? Yeah. That moment just wasn't. It wasn't the moment. It
was like I was in a Made in Dagenham as well.
Yeah.
Which is so British, you know. And I was also in Betty Blue Eyes.
Some of the music for that was just beautiful.
They're stunning shows, And Betty, I don't know why Betty Blue Eyes didn't work, because it was about a royal wedding, and we opened about the time Kate and Wills were getting married. Right. You know? And it was set in times of austerity. We were in austerity, And it had this fabulous cast, you know, Sarah Lancashire, Reese Smith, Adrian Scarborough, David Mamba, all these great actors.
Yep.
And it's like, why isn't this worked? And it was so rousing and British and funny. It was so funny.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know why. And then, we look at other shows that sort of have these extended lives and you think, how's that happened?
Mm.
But I guess it's just to do with taste, isn't it? And as you say, it's timing. Yeah, Made in Dagenham should have worked. It's funny, written by the guy that wrote One Man, Two Governors.
Mm.
You know, incredibly witty, funny, and poignant and relevant piece, especially with Gemma Arterton at the top and the whole campaign she does for equality, you know. And no one came. No one came.
It's mad, isn't it?
It's great. And you do feel for the producers because you just see millions of pounds draining out of the building as mm-hmm. the blood drained from their faces.
Do you have that thing where you come to work each day waiting to be told?
Yeah.
Right, Saturday's the end.
You know.
It's coming.
You know. It's kind of like it's the sort of the long walk, you know.
Yeah.
You just know it's coming. You just think, when is it going to happen? How's this going to happen? I mean, interestingly, I've just been in Paris doing Guys and Dolls, which I think is a brilliant musical, guys. It's so funny. And it's never, ever been presented professionally in France before.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. So to say, I played Nathan Detroit in the original French company of Guys and Dolls in 2019.
That's so cool.
It's bonkers. And, you know, it was directed and choreographed so brilliantly by Stephen Mear. It was so, so wonderful. And I was opposite Rhea Jones, who was just amazing Adelaide, you know. I'm gush, but I believe it. I never got to see it, but from what I saw on stage with that woman, she was amazing. And we had Matt Goodgame and Claire House, who I did 42nd Street with, were Sky and Sarah Brown. And it was... The production was brilliant. The kids were amazing. The set was so classy. I mean, I don't normally do classy shows like that, but this was really classy. It was so clever. It opened the guy, the producer who's produced like 90 odd shows in Paris, used to run the Châtelet, now runs this new theatre called the Marigny, which is on the Champs-Élysées. It's incredible. I said, these are the best reviews I've ever had. There wasn't one negative thing about it. And then, so we opened on the Tuesday. On the Saturday, the place went crazy, and it was the yellow vests.
Mm-hmm.
And we suddenly realised that the theatre was right in the protest path, and behind the theatre, the French president lived.
Oh,
so
wow.
You know, you literally have to go through three security checks to pick up a baguette. You know, it was really odd. And we were doing the matinee that Saturday after this glorious opening, and the audience were restless, and then you suddenly hear this shouting and police sirens and then gunfire, and it was like, where are we?
Wow.
And it was I've never lived, or I've never experienced up close that level of violence, where there's people running through streets, and they looted a restaurant which was literally 200 yards away from where the stage door of the theatre was, and my apartment, I'm walking up the road and all the cars are on fire, and Whoa. There was graffiti everywhere, and it was the really real sense of uneasiness and anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did our two shows, and the police were like, you know, that go home at the end of the show, and everywhere was shut anyway, and then get up the next day, because on the continent you tend to do shows on Saturdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And get up the next day, and literally it's like nothing had happened. Wow. It was, and so, and you go back, but the audience had dropped a bit, and it was very sad. So we were doing great business Tuesdays to Thursdays, and then Parisians started to leave Paris, and every Saturday we went through this, a very similar experience. And sadly that closed the show as well. So another show up in it closed. And it's like, Guys and Dolls is normally indestructible, isn't it? But no, the French, who know how to protest. I mean, they do it so well. And literally it goes crazy And then the next day, it's like nothing's happened and everyone's got onions around their neck and smiling on bicycles, you know.
Standard.
Yeah, people are painting.
In the street,
lovers are happy.
Yeah. And so you're just in this loop of you come to the weekend and it all kicks
weekly,
off again.
Yeah, it was such a strange experience. And it was literally like my apartment was right by the Israeli embassy, which had a constant police presence anyway. Mm-hmm. I remember a couple of times going out the door and the police going, go, get in, Ali, go. And it's literally like you go in and think, I can't go anywhere.
To and be in that acute danger. We're not used to that.
It felt like that, yeah. It felt like that. It was until midday. All the trouble seemed to be in the mornings. I mean, it's really, really well orchestrated and organized protesting. But the French are good at that, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know.
Wow.
It was, but what an incredible experience.
So did that close early?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. And it could have gone on and on, presumably.
Well, we were booked. We had a finite time, but I think that the production and the money they'd poured into it meant that I think it would have had revivals.
Yeah.
But France, I think maybe the UK and England and possibly Germany are quite unique in the fact that we house long-running productions, whereas France and musical theatre, particularly newer to France, it has that repertory system still.
Right.
Possibly a bit more like up here, you know.
Yeah, things move relatively quickly.
Yeah, things move around, yes.
And then they come back, for little bursts. And then let's go to the Fringe and all the rest of
That's one of my ambitions, is to do the Edinburgh Fringe.
It's mad.
Have you done it?
Many times, but I think my advice to you would be, do it under the right circumstances. Do it when someone actually offers you a gig. Don't take any risk.
Oh no, I wouldn't know. Clever enough to do a. I wouldn't do a one man show.
Oh God, but even
Reflections on
just being in something and they say, you know, we're not sure how it's going to go, or the dreaded words profit share. These are the things that I would always keep away from. Oh, sounds wonderful. And then you go there and there's 3,500-4,000 different shows at the Fringe.
I'd like to do one. That hasn't put me off.
No, just be
But I think you have to be attached to something. If anyone needs, that's listening, needs a 50-something-year-old. Do I look 50? Yeah.
I think you can play 35 to 50.
Thank you. It's my
depending
agent.
On how far away the audience is.
And in a certain light when it's really dark.
It's good. Like you say, it's important.
I really want to do it one time. I just don't want to have to get up at 9 o'clock in the morning and give out flyers on the Royal Mile.
These are the things I'm talking about.
But I probably would. I would do it for a while, I'd imagine. I would know. I'm quite a good team player.
It's fun for the first few days, and then by about the middle of the month, you're like, why am I doing this? You know, with the flyers.
I've only ever been for like 2 days at a time and gone to see friends in plays and things, and really loved the vibe of it. But I imagine it's a really hard month.
It is, yeah. But it's great fun. It's amazing that we have that. I feel fairly proud of it.
Oh, it's incredible. And and you all have to like share rooms, don't you, and sleeping bags. And
yeah. If you're lucky. The Red Road Flats would be a dream compared. Yeah. So then a show now, recently you've done 42nd Street.
That's right.
First of all, how did that come to you in terms of getting that job?
Okay, right. So I was lucky enough to play the same role in 42nd Street. So Burt Barryham and Maggie Jones are the two characters, and they're two satellite characters, really. They don't really affect the story. They're the writers of the show, and they're quite warm-hearted, and they're archetypes. I think they're based on like Comden Green, those famous sort of male female writing double acts, and it's very fast sort of Lucille Ball type humor, you know, bantery. And I got to play it before in Chichester, the role before, and there's an adage, and I believe it's true quite a lot of the time, which is if you've played a job once, played a role once, another director won't want to use you for that. They won't. They won't, because they think that as actors we can't give a different opinion about a person.
We would just bring that same.
Although they just want to hear us in the bar, don't they? When someone's just left, then you see lots of different opinions from actors. But it came up, and I really loved doing it. Chichester is like it's a festival. It's a summer season festival down in West Sussex, and it was a great. It was a really fabulous production. It was really dark and really gritty, and it was because it's set in the Depression era, and everyone's literally dancing. Writing, singing for their lives, and the production team we had doing that would really, really emphasize that. And so everything was a bit jaded, and everything was a bit everything was grey and brown, you know. That was that great Noel Coward song, 20th Century Blues. Everything is grey and brown, he says. And it was very much like that. And then they announced they were reviving it in the West End. I was like, yes. But I said, there's no way I'm going to get seen for this. You know,
and is it that before. Production or is
no,
it
No, it was a brand another. New production, okay. which was being directed by the writer, Mark Bramble. And so I went in there and I thought, you know, I think auditioning, there's two schools of thought about it. And I just think, for me, what works best for me is to be 100% in it. So I went in dressed a bit like, mm-hmm. you know, sort of like a writer with glasses and my hair sort of flatter against my head than usual, and a bow tie and a tweed jacket and some chinos. I thought, I'm going to kind of dress a bit for this. Do you know what I mean? And,
okay.
And the first thing the writer said to me before I did anything, he said, you played the show in Chichester, didn't you? And I went, yeah, I did, Mark, yeah. What was the bit of text you added to my script? And I was like, oh, really? And I thought, well, that's it. I might as well just leave now.
Forget it, yeah.
Yeah. And I said, I don't remember, but if you recall me, I bet I do. And I did my audition. And then literally as I left, got on the train, leaving London, I got a phone call from my agent saying, can you go back?
Wow.
And I had to go back, and he'd cast me already, and I got back. I had to go back and paired up with
right.
a partner. And do you know what? It was amazing to work with him, because Mark, who sadly died, and it's such a shame because we've just filmed it. We filmed it, and it's been released, I've got to remember this, in cinemas on the 10th of November. And there will never be a production like it. You know, there was 58 people on stage tap Whoa. Dancing. It was like a biblical, you know.
Yeah.
Cecil B. DeMille movies, you know, it's massive.
So was it filmed with an audience?
It was filmed with an audience over, it was filmed over a space of maybe 2 weeks, and then we did pickups in the daytime. And I've seen part of it, and it's huge and immense.
Wow.
And it's the last show to be in Drury Lane as it was, because it's the theatre at Drury Lane's having a massive, huge renovation and going to have Frozen in there. So I imagine that'd be a Disney theatre for quite a while, because mm-hmm. everyone loves Frozen, don't they?
Yeah,
do you love Frozen?
Oh, I don't know. I've seen it once.
I don't know
the
either.
The movie. I mean, that'll sell, though.
yeah, I think it is already.
Yeah.
And so it was wonderful to be part of that. And but going back to Mark Bramble, he's like from the old school of Broadway. So he used to be called Mr. Bramble, and he referred to all the principals. I was Mr. Howell.
Right. Really
Sheena Easton was Sheena Easton was Miss Easton. She was our first leading lady, and she was fantastic, by the way. Glasgow girl, of course, isn't
oh,
she?
Oh yeah,
she is. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
you felt at home.
she was good. She lives in Vegas now with her kids, but she's fabulous, got that Glaswegian humour down to a T, and a lot of the same language as well.
Yeah,
what was wonderful is just him and the stories he'd tell, and just the old way, the old school way that theatre was made and done, and it was an incredible experience, and to be part of this massive, huge show, and was just... Is that doesn't come along very often.
No,
but
that's a big one.
But I think I'm like that with all work. You know, they talk about needing to be ambitious. My ambition is to work.
Yes,
and to be happy. My ambition has never been to be some huge star. And I don't sit home and cry if I don't get jobs. So I always believe something else will come along. But it's just for me, the ambition is the work, and to keep being challenged, to keep doing new things. And I think, you know, this year, if I think of this year, starting off with 42nd Street, then directing, and then doing Guys and Dolls, then doing the Pet Shop Boys show.
Yep.
How diverse and amazing is that?
That's amazing.
You know, to have all those different people in your head.
Yeah. It's a cast of thousands, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely.
Ooh. And you've done your fair share of panto as well.
Yes, I have. Well, I've done a few.
Didn't you do the big one at the Palladium?
I did the first year of the big one at the Palladium.
What was that like?
It was huge. I mean, seeing the London Palladium full every night was just amazing. So what they did was they had Jimmy Patterson, who... Mm-hmm. Are we near Knightswood here? We are, aren't we?
We're in it.
Okay, yeah. So he's from... I think he's from around here. He designs for them still. He was in the original cast of Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, really?
And I and another guy. There was three guys and three girls, and we were... It was a real old school pantomime. There was 24 dancers, which is huge.
Yeah.
Then you had this stellar lineup. What was it? Julian Clary, Paul O'Grady, Amanda Holden, Paul Zedd and Nigel Havers. It's like this massive star lineup.
Yeah.
And with the six singers were there, and we were kind of like these narrators of Cinderella, and then we play lots of small parts, and we'd also have to understudy. So I had to understudy Paul and Julian, that was my job, as well as play my parts. And of course, you never think you're going to go on, but Paul O'Grady lost his voice, so I had to go on a few times as his cousin Eamon, unexplained, and he'd stand there and I'd sing for him.
He was on,
yeah. This is my cousin Eamon, he's going to tell you about it in song because I can't.
And that is amazing.
Yeah. So, and I'm actually going back there this year. I'm doing the pantomime.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, at the Palladium this year. But I'm the standby and the resident director this time.
Right. Okay.
So I won't be performing every night.
Okay. So you kind of look after the production.
Yeah. And once then I look
once
after,
it's up.
Yeah. Well, I look after the understudies and the cast and just
yep.
liaise between them and the management.
And what's the standby got to do?
The standby sits there, and in case Paul O'Grady, I've lost my voice,
right.
his cousin Eamon will appear again.
Oh, right.
Because he thinks the name's Eamon is funny, and I guess it is funny when you've got that droll.
I think
droll.
It's funny that you're on standing beside him singing for him. That's yeah. funny.
He's going to sing it for you now.
I yeah. thought that he wouldn't go on. No, as long as he can walk, he goes on.
Oh, yeah, they're all a variety, aren't they? None of them go off. None of them will go off.
They find a way around it.
Yeah, there's always a way around it.
Amazing.
I've looked after shows before, and you've got to keep the money on. You know, the money is
the talent, the names.
You know, you have to keep them. Like, what can we do? Could you do that in a wheelchair? It's a tap dance. I know, but could you?
So at all costs,
yeah,
they stay on.
You try to. It's amazing, and it's Goldilocks and the Three Bears this year, and the script is hilarious. It's so adult. I mean, it's like at most pantos, it goes up way over the kid's head. But bearing in mind, it's about a circus. There's a lot of ring gags,
of course. Yeah,
who's got the biggest ring?
Yeah.
And it's obviously I've clearly sold tickets on my delivery there, but it's very funny.
So, have you done resident directing work before?
Yeah, a few times.
Right,
a few times.
Whilst being in the company as well.
Yeah, it's really hard when it's like that. It's really hard when it's like that.
Well, it depends
on the company. It depends who you're working with.
Is that done a lot, though, where the residents in it?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. What shows have you done that one?
Love Me Tender.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which was the songs of Elvis, the story of Twelfth Night and Midsummer Night's Dream, set in the 50s America. Do you know what? It was brilliant.
Okay.
We came here with that. That was amazing. Then we did I did it on Sideshow, which is a musical about two Siamese twins. I mean, it's a true story, very tragic story.
That's an old musical, isn't
it? Yeah, done it quite a few jobs. I enjoy it. It's fun. It's just a different dynamic. I mean, the downside of it is that you can't get too close to people because ultimately, if anything goes wrong or there's a disciplinary issue or something, you can't be out within 1 minute and then the next minute. So it's a lonely, but it's fun.
So do you have to give notes then?
Yeah.
And even though you're on stage, or do you stand and watch the bits you're not
you get,
in?
You get swung off.
Oh, right. Okay.
You swing to yourself sit and off and you sit and watch. Yeah. And then you go around to the talent and you say, anything you need me to look at this evening? And then you get a long list of things to look at, which is normally about dislike and it personal. So you have to have a good filter.
Mm.
But it's a fun job.
Have you ever done swing stuff?
Yeah.
What's that like?
Horrible.
Because I'm doing a lot of understudying in the Christmas show this year.
Are you? Where are you working this year?
I'm in the Lyceum in Edinburgh.
What are they doing?
They're doing a Christmas carol.
And who are you?
I am the dog catcher, because Greyfriars Bobby is in it. The dog from Edinburgh.
That's a statue, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a statue of a real dog who existed in Victorian Edinburgh, I think. Victorian?
It's a really cute story, isn't it? I kind of remember that, yeah.
So it's a baddie kind of a role. But I'm also covering four...
Who are you covering?
...main dudes, Cratchit. Everyone except Scrooge, really. All the guys.
I was resident director on A Christmas Carol, and Paul Nicholas was Scrooge.
Wow.
And I was Jacob Marley. And... He lost his voice, but he thought it was the dry ice. So we had to do this show. We tried it. You had to accommodate him because he's the money. We had to do the whole of Christmas Carol without the dry ice. And so Jacob Marley appears through the fireplace. And it was quite
just clambering through.
Yeah. It's just like, I feel ridiculous now.
I bet you looked at that.
Yeah, do you? Yeah, Scrooge. Clank, clank, clank.
I can see him coming through the fire.
Yeah. Paul, let's not do that again.
And of course, it makes no difference anyway.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Have you had any massive things go wrong that spring to mind?
Yeah. When I did Made in Dagenham, there was a scene in a nightclub where I had to play this sort of really foul-mouthed comedian, a sexist comedian. Mm-hmm. And the women are all riled up because they've just found out they're not getting paid the same as the men. They have to go for a pay cut. And it's, you know, it's a true story, but the story of the how they got the pay rise is true. And so they go to their local social club and there's this sort of really vile, like chubby brown comedian, you know, had to wear a permed hair wig, stains down my shirt, you know, lager stains, fag. Yeah. It's built like that the whole time. No, my wife's so fat. It was that sort of thing, that typical 60s, 70s icon of a male comedian. And I did this big scene and the girls F off, and I'm F off back to them, and then the women force him off stage and he goes up to the dressing room, and it was a two-level set, and basically I just fell down the stairs in the middle of the scene and my foot went through the optics bar, the optics of the bar below in the middle of this scene, and I just remember the whole of the Adelphi Theatre went quiet. And then just leading lady go, the character called Chubby, went, Chubby, are you okay?
Oh, no.
And all 20 people that were watching were like, or however many it was.
All 20 of them.
And the funny thing is, it was filmed and I've got a video of it.
Wow.
Someone sent me a video of it. You've just fallen over on stage, haven't you? Apparently that went viral.
You mean someone was just happened to be
filming it in the audience? Yeah, so I've got that.
What? Man.
That's probably the worst thing that's happened.
But you survived it? You didn't? Did you go off?
No, but the last thing, no, I didn't go, no, I didn't go off. But the last image is this, you see this rejected, dejected comedian sat on these stairs as the truck, sort of this massive structure goes off.
Yeah.
And I, that's probably the biggest round of applause I've ever had in my whole career. Just sit there having a fag, desperately trying to keep some sense of pride.
You're like, that's what I get applause for.
This is what it's come to.
Oh my word. So what would be, I mean, if we could look forward to next year, in an ideal world, where do things go for you, do you think?
I don't know, I just want to keep working. There's keep a couple going. Of things coming in of what I'd like to do.
So you have an idea of what's about to come up?
Yeah, but do you know, It's a lottery, isn't it? It's all lottery. It's right place, right time. Mm. I'm doing this Christmas job until the middle of January. Then I've got a directing job if I want it at a university, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Act.
Oh, that's a nice show.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, it's quite a nice show. And then there's some things happening next year. So I don't know. I kind of like. In my heart of hearts, I'd like to do lots of small jobs.
Right.
I've really enjoyed that about this year, doing lots of small things. Cause I just spent 2 years nearly 2 years doing 42nd Street. So it's kind of like, it's good to sort of mix it up a bit. So ideally that's what I'd like to do. But most of all, I'd like to be well and happy. And I'm having loads of renovation work done on my house and I really want the builder to finish that off so we can start painting.
That's nice.
Really gritty teeth. I'd like to spend more time with my family. I'm very blessed to have 2 grandchildren. I know, I'm like a Channel 5 documentary. I'm not posh enough for Channel 4. So I've got these 2 beautiful grandchildren. I'd like to spend more time with them.
I didn't know you did.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. It's really weird. And how?
Mm.
Now I have children of my own. They ask me, Daddy, how can this be? Said Doris Day. It's true. How did that happen? Kids, it's a long story.
But
nothing I regret. So I think I'd like to do that. I think I don't mind where I work, but I just want to do short. I think I'd like to do some short-term jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going to wish for myself. I think we've got great minds, and I think we can, I do believe that putting positivity and being and sending really happy messages out to the world brings goodness back to you.
Yeah.
So I try to every day get up and say something nice in my head. I just think a nice word in my head, you know, and then everything else comes in. But it's about, I think, putting good stuff out there gets good stuff back to you. And so I believe that with work. I believe you can just put it out there and just say, I'm here, I'm ready, I'll take it. And don't let anything else get in your way and it comes to you. does to me anyway.
Wow. Have you always had that?
No.
That's something you've had to develop?
Yeah.
Right. So you were different before? When you were younger, you more negative or easier to get down?
I think it was easier to get down. I think there's always, as any sort of artist, there's always the fear of the world drying up, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's good to diversify, but I think it's also, you can spend so much time worrying, you can spend so much time getting tense and thinking, when's this going to happen? It's like, well, it will happen. An old actor said to me once when I started out, he said, whoever you feel miserable, Christopher, read your CV. It's true though, because if your CV says you've worked, then the chances are you'll work again.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
I think that's a really, really good, a good maxim to have, you know. And the other thing is to keep practicing.
Yeah.
You know, keep reading, keep going to see things, keep learning. That's the other way that you can sort of get so on.
Be in the middle of it all and
be immerse involved. Yourself in it. You know, I think politicians are immersed, you know, in what they do, whoever they work for. You know, I guess an MP is a success. For every MP, there must be 10 failed MPs, yeah? Mm. So for everyone that's called themselves an actor and worked, they are a success. And I think you just focus on the fact that that's happened. Yeah. And because it's happened once, it should happen again. Law of averages says it should, shouldn't it?
You would think so, yeah.
So that's the way I try to be. Obviously, there's moments like, what's happening?
Yeah.
But you have to get over that.
But you've not had massive gaps, have you?
Well, do you know, if I have, I've filled them with other things. This work in the drama school stuff, the directing stuff. But no, I haven't, and touch wood, I won't do. But, you know, I'm getting older now, and so, you know, it's going to be Mysterious Man in Bath Chair very soon, isn't it?
Well, your casting bracket changes with new opportunities. You know,
yeah, exactly. Local derelict one.
And you have to do less choreography as time goes on. You get away with more, won't you?
Yeah.
More dressing room time. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it has diversified, and I have noticed over the last few years you do less. Mind you, 42nd Street was really dancey, actually.
True.
And I was with some nubile wench for my stage wife character.
But he is a sort of a middle-aged type character, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he is. Well, he was middle-aged, wasn't he?
So, there's no getting around that.
Yeah, yeah. Just looking anxious with a clipboard. But props are really good.
Props are so good.
Yeah, you can hide behind them. It's something to do with your hands, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's safe scratching.
Yes.
I think I'm always looking forward.
Yeah.
I think I'm always looking forward. And I think that's a good way to be. Just have that positive. I've got this. I can do it.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, that sounds good. I'm taking some of that away with me today because I've had a couple of days of the other thing.
That, which is what?
That oh God, what if it never comes again? Or, you know, what's the point? All that. I've had that. And actually, I do get that. And I think we all do.
Yeah, of course.
You know, peaks and troughs. But it's so nice to talk to you today because I needed to hear all that
oh,
stuff.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, surely I just saw your... Was it Playing a Pie in a Pint?
Yes, yeah.
On TV. I saw it yesterday, and surely something's going to happen from that. I mean, that's really good exposure for you.
It is. I've got work coming up as well, but my mind will still say, yeah, but even if it's the work, well, but is it the right work? Do you know, that's a terrible affliction. Because that's awful. I mean, I've got to be grateful.
100%. I mean, listen, we've all done jobs that we've gone, oh, get me out. But then you think, I'm paying for stuff, and...
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's, what is it, 4 hours out of your day, 5 hours out of your day? There's another 20 that you can go and
that's true.
Be happy in. I enjoyed your play, though.
Thanks, man. Thanks for chatting to me.
It's really good to chat to you. Brilliant. Cheers.
There you go. Christopher Howell there. And a wee change, I think, from the usual fare. If there is a usual fare, it was cool to hear Chris to talk to him about his experiences, which are vast and you know, multitudinous. Is that a word? Multitudinous? No. But if it's not, it should be. Either way. I don't want to stay chatting too long because I fear I'm going to talk nonsense. But I really enjoyed listening back to that interview, actually. I was editing it this morning in Dubai Airport at about 4 o'clock. Again, a sudden burst of energy, and you have to take advantage of these things. So I sat at the gate and edited the interview. If only I'd had a mic with me, I would have done this bit too in the airport. But there you go. This is my second burst of energy of the day, and I'm getting you the chat ready to go. And after this, who knows when the next one will be. It could be days. Luckily, I don't have anything major to do for a couple of days. But I've got a lot of good interviews coming up, and I'm looking forward to doing them. I've got a lot of nice ones already recorded for you for the next few weeks, and some other ones coming up. So, yes, the show continues. And again, thanks very much for listening to it and being part of it. And for all your comments and likes and retweets and all the rest of it, it is very much appreciated. Remember, go to puttingittogethercast.com and look for the yellow donate button if you'd like to contribute something financially to the show. It would be very much appreciated. So that's about all from me. Until next week, same time, same place, I'll just say to you, cheerio now.